And there it is. So I will start over again. Thank you so much for the introduction to Brad and Kelly. Thank you all for calling in. I know that down here in Miami, we are in the pre-holiday crunch, so our calendars are quite immense right now. So thank you for taking the time to call in. I know you have a lot to do. I will breeze through this quickly so you guys can get out and get back to your shelter hearings and your emergency motions that everyone's throwing on calendar. As Brad mentioned, I'm Dana Vigiano. I am in the 11th Circuit. I've been in dependency since about 2009, both as a best interest attorney, but also as an attorney ad litem. As an attorney ad litem, I was focusing on teens, so that's where my love of the IL, the independent living issue, comes from. I do want a quick shout out, thanks to the Third Circuit. You all presented on independent living in February of this year. So I know you've all had you know, some knowledge about IL. You've already heard a presentation. This is just a refresher course, you know, a quick maybe 30 minutes on IL, because down here in Miami, we're still having issues with the agencies and the department providing some misinformation in court regarding IL. So we just want to make sure that, you know, any new attorneys, any new best interest attorneys on the call, that you have a quick refresher so that you can stand tall for those teens in court. You can also follow along on that handout that was emailed out. It has all the citations that you're going to need for any motions or orders that you're drafting. So I will go into the details, but your handout specifically lists, you know, the sections that you'll need. So I'm going to jump into it. I broke it up into pre-18th birthday and post-18th birthday. Like I said, you've heard about most of this, so I'm going to try to focus on the interesting issues that are becoming problems in court still. So normalcy, we kind of roll our eyes. We've been hearing about normalcy for years now. We know normalcy, the Quality Parenting for Children and Foster Care Act. Children in care should be able to participate in age and developmentally appropriate activities without first obtaining DCF or court approval. We roll our eyes because we've been talking about it for years. However, we're still having issues. I don't know if it's just new DCF attorneys, new case managers, but they're continuing to come into court and asking for everyone in the world to be fingerprinted and background checked and attend trainings. And we need to keep in mind that we don't necessarily need all of that for our kids to have a fun activity after school. Out-of-home caregivers use the reasonable prudent parent standard to determine if an activity is appropriate for each youth. That's right there in the statute. You have that citation. Some good examples, and these are things that I have experienced personally in the courtroom. A youth spending time at a friend's home, that could be a day or an overnight visit. I was recently, earlier this year, in a pride training. It was a training for new foster parents who are trying to get licensed. And a discussion was brought up about sleepover parties. And I think the example was for a 7-year-old girl and an 8-year-old girl and whether she can go to a sleepover party. And the information was being given to these new foster parents that was not something that was allowed. So we just need to keep in mind that you know, the reasonable prudent parent standard can be used by the foster parents to determine whether those kids can go over to their friend's house or not. There was also an issue of a volunteer guardian who had a great relationship with a child, wanted to take the child to their home for holidays, family functions, playdates with their children. Again, the agency wanted fingerprints on our volunteer guardian litem. So these are issues, you know, that you need to bring up in court if you're getting some pushback. School trips, even if they're overnight, these are things that our youth should really be participating in. Imagine that they're the only ones left out because the agency says we need to fingerprint everyone. It doesn't really make sense. With these sleepovers, whether it's at a friend's house or the volunteer guardian's house, this is obviously a case-by-case basis. You need to talk to your supervisors if you don't feel comfortable, if you don't think something is appropriate. Obviously, discuss it with your team. We all know that we have great teams, whether it be our CAMs or CAM2s or supervisors, our directors. You know, reach out to them and hash out the normalcy issues if you're confused. Also, I wanted to point out, effective May of this year, the Florida Administrative Code now lists examples of appropriate childhood activities, and states agencies must provide foster parents with training on normalcy issues. I don't know if this is happening. Like I said, I was a little bit disturbed in that foster parent training that I was in earlier this year that they were giving a little bit of misinformation. So just, you know, be aware that the foster parents are supposed to receive training, you know, and they should be making the decisions themselves on what's appropriate. Let's see. Oh, extracurricular activities. I wanted to bring this this note up because sports at school, junior year expenses, senior year expenses. These are issues that, at least in Miami, are kind of brought up in an emergency basis. All of a sudden, we need a check from the agency because the child needs, you know, a fee for equipment or a class ring or senior pictures or yearbooks. My advice would be, and I tell our volunteers, that they can advocate for you know, the sports and the senior and junior year expenses by ensuring that the agency has the information very early in the school year. So if you have a junior or a senior, maybe that volunteer guardian could go to the school, have a visit at the school, meet the guidance counselor, the teacher, whomever, and get a list, because you know that the school is going to have a list of the requests that are going to be made throughout the year for money. So the GAL can help to obtain and provide that info to the agencies, and the best interest attorneys can get orders early on in the year as well to ensure that the payments are being made to the schools. So again, that's just a little side thing that you can do as an advocate to ensure that these kids aren't missing grad night, and making sure that they have their doctor's clearances, like their physicals, done early on, you know, and the check requests are in for equipment and such. Next topic, Keys to Independence program. We love this. We've been pushing it as a program. That's great. It's definitely a case-by-case basis, but I feel like we're not using it enough. Many of our youth really can get a learner's permit or a driver's license. We have some pretty stellar youth that are capable of handling that responsibility. So I just wanted to you know, point out that program again. We have that as a resource for our kids. The website keystoindependence.org, they have tips on how to apply for reimbursement. That's a great website. It's a great resource. I suggest to go there and take a peek at their tips. Foster parents, group home representatives, or caseworkers, they can all co-sign for the learner's permit application with the youth. They all have the ability to do that. And the Florida statute exempts foster parents of a minor or an authorized representative of a group home or a case manager at the agency from assuming any obligation or liability for any damages by signing the application. So, I mean, we've made it really straightforward for everybody to pursue these permits and license for the kids. Insurance is an issue, and it's kind of a pushback from a lot of the agencies and the foster parents because they don't understand. They don't want their insurance to go sky high. How you get the insurance, there's actually three ways. Foster parents can add the child to their policy. Again, the Florida statute prohibits insurers from charging foster parents more for their car insurance for a foster child who has a learner's permit. The second way is the youth may apply for coverage under the Florida Automobile Joint Underwriting Association. This option will provide the young adults with a non-owner auto insurance policy. The third way, a guardian ad litem or an attorney ad litem can obtain an order removing the disability of non-age so the youth can apply for insurance on their own. And I'll actually speak to those orders removing the disability in just a second. But those are three different ways that we can get these kids insurance if we need to. My personal pet peeve, I guess, with this topic is the driving practice. I don't think that we really talk about that much, but we need to raise the issue in court if the child does not have access to a car to get the required numbers of practice hours for the license. Anybody who has a teen, you know, in their life knows that you have to practice to once you have that learner's permit. So we feel, you know, that the department needs to ensure that the child can practice driving, you know, once that permit is obtained. So that's kind of an issue that nobody really discusses, or at least I've never discussed with a case manager before. It's a fabulous program, the Keys to Independence, but we need to make sure that the child's placement is on board with it also. The agency needs to educate foster families, group homes, for sure group homes, and other placements. So in order for it to be successful, we really do need action and involvement from the caregivers, you know, to help support these kids in going to get the application, to get the insurance, to have the practice. It's a little bit more to take on, but the guardians, we can advocate for that in and out of court. We can have conversations with the foster parents as well as, you know, bring it up in court if we're having issues. So like I said, fabulous program. Take advantage of it if you can. Next topic for the pre-18th birthday, the 17.3 JR and case plan, the transition plan. The case plan must be presented with the 17.3 JR, and it has to state exactly what type of IL services the child has already received and is currently receiving. Now, I bring that up because I frequently don't see those together. The 17.3 JR, I feel like we all know. The DCF attorneys usually have the questions memorized. You know, we usually need to get all the documents after the 17.3 because the agency hasn't necessarily put them all together yet. But look out for that case plan. Look out for that transition plan, because that's going to lay out exactly what the child has received. And if they haven't received anything, this is a great opportunity to put those services in place and at least mention them to the judge. You know, this child needs to get the bank account. This child needs to get their learner's permit, whatever it may be. The court can issue an order to show cause and find DCF in contempt if it has failed to provide IL services up to this point. So keep that in mind, too. You do have claws, you do have teeth, so you can you know, make the agency really you know, get these IL services in place if they have not already done so. Also, to jump back to those senior year expenses, we can actually throw those into that case plan. We need to ask for those to be included in the case plan tasks, the pictures, the rings, the prom, the grad night. Those are all things that can be listed in the case plan, and then you have them in a great place that you can reference if these, you know, things aren't being done. You can you have a great document to bring up to the judge. The orders removing disability of non-age, there are a few. You can get an order removing disability of non-age for housing or getting utilities for, you know, FPL to be turned on. Bank account and car insurance, the kids can be as young as 16 years old to get that order if your child needs to get a bank account or get the car insurance, that third option. So keep that in mind too. There's actually some example orders that are in the back of your materials. Our Florida Guardian Ad Litem Dependency Practice Manual has some great information. I grabbed some of the example orders from there, so please take a look at our practice manual. It's a great place to find some examples as well. Down here in Miami, a couple of my colleagues and I realized that sometimes there was a jurisdictional gap for our kids when they were hopping from extended foster care to PES, the post-secondary. And so we had drafted a couple orders. We were asked by one of the judges to draft a couple orders to prevent that jurisdictional gap. The child was falling through when they were transitioning, like I said, from ESC to PES. And an order extending jurisdiction giving the youth a voice if the post-18 IL services aren't being provided. So for some reason there's an issue with ESC or there's an issue with PES, and they didn't have a way to get back in because the agency said, oh, well, your case is closed, there's nothing we can do. So we had that just as a safety net. Obviously, there's appeals that you can do, administrative appeals. I'll get to that in a second when I talk about ESC. But there is an order extending jurisdiction and an order that's stating the exact dates that the child will be discharged from ESC and eligible for PES in the back of your materials that were emailed out to you. So you can, they're just examples. You can, you know, obviously tweak them how it would fit your situation. But they're good to have and to keep in mind just for that safety net. There was also a suggestion in my division that there's a mandate that all of the teens visit Planned Parenthood. We have, especially with our CSEC kids, our human trafficking victims, we have lots and lots and lots of unplanned pregnancies, with our teenagers. And so some of the districts have added to that case plan that you go to Planned Parenthood or some type of something better than the healthy teens that they get at the agency, something beyond that. Boys and girls should both go. Obviously, everybody needs to have some education in that realm. And like I said, listed in the case plan that those kids go and talk to a professional about the different options for whatever, birth control, pregnancy, whatever the circumstances may be. It's good to have that extra resource in there. So maybe we can prevent some of the unplanned stuff that's happening. Now, to jump into the post-18th birthday, and we're doing great on time. The ESC, Extended Foster Care Requirements and Benefits. Again, thank you to the Third Circuit. You guys have already kind of gone over this. So I'm just going to pull out, I'll go over it real quick, and then I'll pull out the stuff that we've been having issues with. Youth are automatically enrolled in EFC when they turn 18 in foster care. They must opt out of it. It's automatic that they go into it. They do not need to be in foster care for 6 months. Just last week, I had a case where the case manager stood up and said that they would not be automatically enrolled in EFC. And so, oh, the child, you know, I don't know, they're dragging their feet and they don't want to submit the documents. And I had to stand up and say, no, 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 there's no documents. They're in foster care. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing, so they'll be automatically enrolled. So keep that in mind. The young adult can leave and re-enter EFC an unlimited amount of times until their 21st birthday or the 22nd birthday if they have a documented disability. If the child returns to their parent, here's a little note that actually I didn't know for a little bit. If the child returns to their parent, they lose eligibility for EFC, but may return if the parent placement does not work out. And I had to have a conversation with one of my volunteers, one of my guardian volunteers, because they didn't know that part either. And so they were having a conversation with the youth that wasn't quite accurate. So I just jumped in and let them know that, you know, once you turn 18 and you want to go back to mom and dad, that's great, but you're not going to be eligible for EFC. So just to keep it in mind, not advocating either way, just to keep it in mind. The young adult must live in a supervised living environment. This gets tricky because many of our youth aren't able to remain in their group home. At least in Miami, we have lots of group homes for our teens. I feel like they kind of all end up in a group home, which is a whole other issue for a whole other call. So the GAL, the guardian ad litem, can assist by thinking outside the box. You know, are there any stable relatives? Maybe the child can go to an apartment with a reliable roommate. Maybe there is an adult sibling that, you know, is really got their life together and they're doing well and could be a great influence. These are supervised living environments that would be acceptable, so keep that in mind and definitely think outside the box. It's like normalcy. We're all thinking outside the box. The young adult must be in high school vocational program or working at least 80 hours per month. The youth can also be participating in a program or activity that eliminates barriers to employment. If the youth is discharged from EFC for cause, this is where the appeal comes in. They can appeal that decision through an administrative hearing. If the youth asks for this verbally or in writing within 10 days, the youth can stay in EFC until the decision is made. Otherwise, the youth has 30 days to request the appeal hearing. This is super confusing for our 18-year-olds, and it's one reason that I personally think that having that additional attorney ad litem would be very helpful for the youth. A lot of the times when I was an attorney ad litem, I had the teen's number. We would text a lot. I would get notice. I would get notice that they were getting kicked out of EFC, and I would be able to contact them. Otherwise, their addresses are changing, or they're not getting their mail, and they won't receive that letter. So it's just something to keep in mind. And don't forget, the EFC case plan must be filed within 30 days after the 18th birthday. So that's something to look for also. Post-secondary education services and support, PESS. The youth must be between 18 and 23, must have a high school diploma or a GED, must have been living in licensed care for at least 6 months prior to the 18th birthday. Remember, that's not the case for EFC. Or prior to adoption or closure in permanent guardianship, sorry. They have to be enrolled full-time, which is at least 9 credit hours, in a post-secondary educational institute, you know, like a college. Very important legal issue that I find very interesting. There is a Florida administrative rule that states that the young adult is living in their licensed care on their 18th birthday if they were in the legal custody of DCF. Let me repeat, legal custody of DCF. So this allows us to look at the youth's legal status on their birthday and not the location of where they were living. So we have kids on run. We have kids that are in SIP placements. We have kids that were arrested and are in DJJ on their 18th birthday. They can be eligible for PESS. So we do need to keep that in mind. And again, the misinformation that comes from the agency sometimes does not inform the judge that they have that option. So we need to make sure that we know that and we advocate for kids who are eligible for PESS. The stipend, the monthly stipend, is $12.56. That's, you know, reminiscent of our RTIs, same. Whether the youth receives any of this money directly depends on their situation. You can actually be in EFC and PESS at the same time. So it really depends on where the child is living and what their circumstances are, whether they get that check in their hands or not. So that's kind of a case-by-case basis and something to you know, keep in mind when you're talking about when you're having staffings or talking to the agency about the child's circumstances. Approval for PESS is yearly. The youth must be making academic progress to receive renewal. Academic progress can be argued at an administrative appeal hearing if PESS is denied. It's similar to the EFC appeal, so keep that in mind as well. Tuition and fee exemption. The exemption from paying tuition, fees, or costs to attend any Florida public university, college, or school district workforce education programs. Teams who can take advantage of this are, and these have changed, not recently, but over the life of the tuition and fee exemption section, it has changed a couple times actually. So teams who can take advantage of this are any foster youth in DCF or relative custody who are under the age of 18. We don't often see this one. I have to say a lot of my kids are a little bit behind in school. I think that you can share that sentiment. So we don't often see this, but we do need to keep it in mind for those, you know, stellar academic kids who are in that situation. They can take advantage of it. Any foster youth who was in DCF relative or non-relative custody on their 18th birthday. Any child who was adopted through the dependency system. Any child placed in a permanent guardianship after their 16th birthday and having spent at least 6 months in care. This exemption is only available until the young adult turns 28 years old. Keep that in mind too. If you've been in the dependency system for long enough, you're going to have foster youth that will reach out to you and they'll be in their 30s and they want to know about the exemption and how they can use that. I had that happen. So please tell your youth that they need to take advantage of it before they turn 28. And for more information on the tuition and fee exemption, you can actually call the State of Florida Adoption Information and Referral Center. Let me see if I listed that number. I did. I listed on your materials. It's 1-844-IL-YOUTH. And I've actually called them a couple times with little questions, so they're a good resource to call if you have any questions. And make sure teens are given post-18 options that may not include school. Every child is unique. Examples are the U.S. Armed Services or Job Corps. Just keep in mind, you know, this is not a cookie cutter, so thinking outside the box always in dependency. And I think, actually, that kind of wraps up. There are some helpful links to some IL materials on the bottom of the handout. The Independent Living Forms and Applications is fantastic. The Florida Independent Living Resource Center is great. Florida's Children First, I go there all the time. Florida, the Department of Children and Families has a good independent living site. You can just see, you know, what's available to you, where they're coming from. And of course, last but definitely not least, our Guardian Ad Litem website as well as the GAL practice manual are fantastic. So the training materials and the resources that you can find on our website are stellar. And like I said, the practice manual comes with me to court with my statute book because it's so fantastic. So I think that's it. My contact info is on the bottom of the outline. If you have any questions or any interesting independent living stories, I live for it. So you can shoot me an email or give me a call and we can chat about that, especially when we're thinking outside the box. We really do need to make the IL services fit our kids because they're definitely worth it. So Brad, I think that kind of wraps up the IL refresher.
Thank you, Dana. That just demonstrated a wealth of information regarding that. Does anyone have any questions today on anything that Dana just covered?
I actually did with regard to the practice driving that you referenced in the beginning of the presentation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Implementing that sometimes might be a little more difficult than just saying that they're entitled to it.
Absolutely.
And I can promise you that my CBC is going to come back at me in court and say, well, can the guardian do it? And I do have some approved for transportation guardians that do transport teens. What is the program's, you know, if I have a guardian come to me, if I have a volunteer come to me on that, would that be permitted?
Brad, should I take that question, or I'm not really sure what. Go ahead. I don't know what our stance is. From me personally, I'm not sure how we feel about driving. You know, if we're going to volunteer to be the practice people, I can say, you know, obviously normalcy from the statute, looking at just the bare bones Florida statute. Absolutely, we can be part of the advocacy team that helps them to do that. But I don't really want to speak on, you know, the powers that be that are above me.
I don't think I understand that. I think that's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
And the answer may not be had today, but if we could get that answer,
sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We can get that answer, and so that I know that at least you get it in addition to everybody else, and we'll publish it to everyone. But who's asking the question now?
My name is Judy Burke, and I'm out of the 13th.
Judy, okay, yeah. All right.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you, Judy, because you're absolutely right. The implementation is tricky, which is why I wanted to bring it up and let you guys have all the information that you can, because the biggest part of that Keys to Independence program is how do these kids actually do this, you know? So we really need to be advocates in court, whether it's us volunteering or, you know, forcing the agencies to figure it out, because it's in the statute and they're allowed to do it and they have the right to do it. So I would say bring it up to your judge, you know, to have somebody figure it out, and then we can definitely get an answer about the volunteer guardians being part of that advocacy, so we can figure it out. But it was a great question, because you're definitely going to get pushback.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Judy. Any other questions today? And of course, you can email or call Dana, and up until the point that she turns her phone off from the number she called. Any other questions today? Well, everybody needs to go talking.
I know. We are definitely in crunch mode.
I think that concludes the call. Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, Dana. Thanks.